The tap is finally open.
To be honest, it's almost surreal.
As a fresh source of water surges into Waukesha.
No matter what we did, we had to find a new water source.
But the transition comes with some adjustments.
There is a high chance that this can have a deadly impact on your fish.
And environmental concerns.
We definitely are going to play a watchdog role.
As one of America's Great Lakes begins flowing beyond the basin. From the Fox 6 Studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I'm joined, as always, by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are joined this week over Zoom by Fox 6's resident Waukesha beat reporter, Brett Lemoyne. Hey, Brett, welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, happy to be here.
So we are recording this episode on Wednesday, October 18th, for release on Thursday, October 19th, and it's been a little more than a week since the city of Waukesha officially made a historic switch in the source of its drinking water, from underground wells to water piped in from Lake Michigan. Brett, this is the culmination of, and I'm not exaggerating here, literally decades of environmental testing, court battles, political maneuvering, expensive engineering. As a resident of Waukesha, can you put into words how big of a deal this is?
Well, let me first disclose that I am almost 41 years old, okay? And for more than half of my life, this has been something that has been talked about in this community. It's really a seismic change that impacts 72,000 people in the city of Waukesha. And when you think about how important your drinking water is and how often you use water from your tap, from your faucet, from your bath, from your garden, for whatever, it really is a huge, huge change.
So let's talk about how we kind of got here. So we know that Waukesha is now tapping into Lake Michigan to get its water, but why?
Great question. And we're going to go back in time to the 1800s, because it really is, you know, part of Waukesha's history is its water. Waukesha was put on the map because of its spring water, right? People came to this community because of the quote-unquote healing powers of Waukesha's spring water. And so over the years, that water supply was depleted. You know, there's only so far down you can keep digging until, you know, there's no water left. And unfortunately, the further down you go, the more radium you're finding in the water supply. And that was really the crux of this issue, is that there was an abundance of radium in the water. Now, the city says it never exceeded EPA limits and it was still safe to drink. However, the city was under a court order to find a new water supply. And that really set off, as you said, a decades long search to find a solution.
Well, I think it's so interesting what you said about the city says the radium levels were still low enough that they were not exceeding these EPA standards. I find the city's history with this so fascinating because for a long period of time, they were fighting the idea that they needed to find a different water source. And then at a certain point, especially when the court order came by, they had to switch that flip that switch and say, actually, we need to go out and find another source of water. And now we need to convince a whole other group of people and eight states that we need to do this. And here's why it's so important. So they really had to kind of shift their approach in this, right?
Yeah, I mean, the plans, and I will not say by any means that I'm an expert on the history of this because it is so huge and so cumbersome. But yeah, in a nutshell, there had been a number of ideas that had been thrown on the table. And this was really kind of the only option that you know, made sense, not only from a financial standpoint, but from a logistical standpoint. And as you kind of hinted at, it was a historic decision, too, because there aren't any other communities that have done what Waukesha has done. In order to get Lake Michigan water, they had to go to every governor and every state that surrounds the Great Lakes, including two Canadian provinces, and get their permission to do this. This was not an easy task by any means. I think the final analysis for Waukesha's water supply issues here was done in 2002. And it wasn't until 2016 that all of these groups, the Great Lake Compact, as it were, signed off on this project.
So one thing I want to jump in on, you said it was 2002. And I'm sorry, what was it that happened in 2002?
2002 was when the first analysis of the potential water supply option was.
So that happened in 2002. I was doing some research on this yesterday and didn't realize, but the Great Lakes St. Lawrence River Basin Compact didn't actually come about until 2005 and wasn't signed into federal law until 2008. So actually this problem even predates the Great Lakes Compact, which was designed to protect the Great Lakes, to protect the waters in the basin of the Great Lakes. Obviously, there's some real concern about this is the greatest freshwater resource possibly in the world. And there's a lot of places we know all over the country that go, we are starved for water. If we could find a way to get that water, they'd love to come in. So there's this sort of idea that we want to protect that resource. Waukesha, you said, made history. It's not the first community to divert Lake Michigan water. It's the first one that sits entirely outside the Great Lakes Basin. Mm-hmm. There are some communities that straddle the basin that have gotten the water. Waukesha's completely outside. So this was not an easy thing politically, I'm guessing, to get all these places to agree to.
No, it wasn't. And we should say also, Brian, first and only so far. There's been no other community that's done what Waukesha has. But when you think about it, yeah, there are just a million people in just our viewing area now that drink Lake Michigan water. I heard an estimate, and I don't know the exact number, but there are many, many more millions of people, you know, surrounding the Great Lakes that are utilizing this for drinking water. So obviously, these communities want to be very selective, and you have to make a pretty strong pitch in order to get this exemption. In fact, Waukesha had to submit 3,000 pages of documents as part of their review process of this whole procedure.
So obviously they're all in. One of the big questions that people ask is, well, who's going to pay for this? Clearly it's a large project, $286 million. Who is paying for it?
Well, the taxpayer is going to foot the bill for a big chunk of it. This is the largest infrastructure project in the history of this city, in terms of scope, in terms of size, in terms of dollar amount. And unfortunately, the taxpayer is going to end up feeling a little bit of a pinch here, because our water bills alone are set to triple over just the next couple of years. So it is a pretty significant impact for all of the people, all of the businesses that utilize drinking water here in the city.
Were residents, are they like super excited about this? I mean, did they understand what the consequences would have been had they not done this project?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at it just in terms of long-term history, you know, a lot of people in Waukesha have been very familiar with the ongoings of this. This is something that is now, you know, crossed several generations of people living in this community. But yeah, I mean, I think most people realize, you know, we got to get on board here, and thankfully, our neighbors in Milwaukee and Milwaukee County were also on board with this at the end, at least. And so, yeah, I think everybody was aware that this something had to be done.
Without getting into the nitty gritty details of it, I believe Milwaukee actually benefits from this, right? Because they're getting paid for some of these rights for this water to come through Milwaukee and into Waukesha.
Yeah, exactly. So there is like a pump, and I'm again not an expert on the ins and outs of the logistics here, but I believe there is a pumping station that is in Milwaukee that Waukesha built, that is essentially you know, leased on public land in Milwaukee that Waukesha had to pay for, and will continue to pay for. I think there's a 100-year contract or something like that that the city has entered into with Milwaukee County. So, yeah, and, you know, essentially, you know, Milwaukee plays a big part in this, because they're more or less they're selling us the water as part of this project.
So you've been reporting on this for a long time, months, not as long as this project has been in the works.
By the way, you have a great anecdote about this, about how long you've been reporting on this that you were telling me as we were talking about this, right, Brett?
My son is 3 years old. And he likes to pretend to be reporter. So he grabs a notebook and he sits at a desk And I say, what are you doing? And he goes, I'm working on a story about Lake Michigan water.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. Oh, that's so good. Okay, great podcast, guys. No, okay, so you've been reporting on this a long time. So, and we talked about the documentation that they needed to provide and the money and all that stuff. Were there other roadblocks or anything else that would have kind of come in the way of the transition of moving this water?
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a roadblock I think it was in January or late December of the end of last year and the beginning of this year, where there was an issue with that land in Milwaukee County that Waukesha needed for this project. And ultimately, you know, cost, I think, a little bit more than Waukesha was expecting to pay for it, but certainly benefited Milwaukee County in that regard. So, there were some hurdles here, and there continue to be, especially as it pertains to the return flow of the water to Milwaukee County and back ultimately into Lake Michigan.
I want to talk about the experience that the city is having now that you've actually made the switch. But before we get to that, you talk about that return flow. One of the keys to the approval, to getting the approval of all of these Great Lakes states and the two Canadian provinces, was the agreement that since his water's being pumped outside the Great Lakes Basin, Waukesha's got to return it back to the Great Lakes Basin. So other than whatever sort of, I guess, evaporates or goes away through consumption, this water has to go back. How is Waukesha making sure that this water all ends up back in Lake Michigan?
Yeah, good question. This is something that is in that contract. It's part of that agreement with the compact. It's part of the agreement with the DNR and the EPA and all the stakeholders involved. 100% of the water that's used needs to go back. Of course, as you mentioned, Brian, there are exceptions for the water that evaporates and the water that we consume and whatnot. But more or less, everything that they take from the lake needs to go back. Now, Waukesha is contracted. They can take up to 8 million gallons per day from Lake Michigan. Right now, the estimate is about 6 million gallons per day is what they're looking to take. But that water needs to get treated. It needs to get treated here in Waukesha and then flows back out. There's a location in Franklin where there's a very discreet pumping station that we visited last week. And the water at that location is then pumped into the river and then ultimately flows back into Lake Michigan.
And there are people keeping an eye on that, right? Like to see, is this water that's going back, is it contaminated? Are there problems? Like what's going back into the river system that obviously a lot of people rely on for another variety of reasons?
Yeah, first and foremost, Waukesha says they are committed to monitoring the water in the river. They've partnered with a couple of third-party entities, some universities and some other groups, to monitor the quality of the water in the Root River for at least the next decade. I would imagine that will continue beyond that, but they're committed right now for at least the next decade. But there are other groups, Brian and Sarah, that have come forward and said, you know what, we're going to just test and monitor this ourselves just in case. And we talked with Milwaukee Riverkeeper last week, and they were already taking samples even just on day two of this process. Once the button, as it were, was pushed on the project and the water started flowing, they were already out there taking samples. They're concerned about some of the items that are not being filtered, that just can't be filtered out of the water for this project. And so they're worried about, you know, things like pharmaceuticals, for example, hand sanitizers, things that maybe just are now foreign to the Root River that have never been introduced in any capacity in that waterway. And so they want to just make sure that they're protecting wildlife in that area, and then also the water then that everyone else drinks, and then that we ultimately reconsume as citizens out here in Waukesha. But, you know, you're drinking that water too in Milwaukee. It really puts into perspective in terms of how massive the Great Lakes are and how many people are drinking out of it, why that needs to happen, why there needs to be safeguards and monitoring taking place.
I am an old lady, and I feel like I am fascinated by all of this. I mean, I don't know, just the process and what it took and everything. So as I sit
it comes back down to wild. Water. I mean, water is, you heard the old saying, water is life. How much of our life depends on water?
And you don't think about it.
I think some of that comes back too to the things you've been reporting on recently, Brett, right, about just all the different ways having different water is something people need to be prepared for, because it's not going to be the same.
Well, it's not the same, right?
Water's not water, right? I mean, there are differences.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the taste and the smell, at least the smell from the onset, were noticeably different. I mean, I noticed it myself as a citizen of this community. There were a number of things that the city had said that people need to be prepared for. One was that kind of chloriney smell that was going to come, at least for this initial phase when the water started to flow. But other issues too, in terms of the color. There was some concern that, you know, some of the sediment that was in the pipes, since it was being flushed, it was kind of like, you know, when a water main breaks in your neighborhood and they say, you know, run your pipes, you might see some redness in the water, that iron. That was kind of what they were expecting here throughout the city with this process. Now, I've heard very few people have any issues in terms of that. But there were secondary issues, too, that the city was making people aware of, namely people that have fish. The water in the Lake Michigan water is being treated with chloramines, which is a combination of chlorine and ammonia. And we talked to over the summer a guy that runs an aquatic center in downtown Waukesha, selling fish and whatnot. And he said, yeah, I mean, this could potentially be deadly to people who have pet fish in Waukesha, because essentially you're putting that ammonia that you're trying to get out of your fish tank back into the water if you don't treat it. So that was a concern. There was also a concern with people that are on kidney dialysis because of the machines that run with water and whatnot. So there were a lot of things that people were prepared for ahead of time. But, you know, luckily, I have not heard of any significant issues since that button was pushed just last week.
You know, what really stood out to me in one of the stories you did was, I guess I wouldn't have thought of this, but for all these years, Waukesha's been on this aquifer, this well water. You have issues with water hardness. Mm-hmm. And I have private well, so we have, you know, rust and hard water. You've got to have a water softener. And I go through an awful lot of water softener salt. And you actually talked to a water softener, a water softening company who said, yeah, we're probably going to lose business here. But also, people who have these existing systems are going to need to make some changes, right?
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that. I just had to reach because I've, you know, as a citizen, we're bombarded with letters and whatnot in the mail from places like Culligan Water or Soft Water Inc. Those are two, you know, places that provide water softening tools for homeowners. And you're right. Yeah, they did say, yeah, we're probably going to lose business. They weren't exactly thrilled that the city is telling people that the water is going to be, I think they say, about 60% softer than what the previous water supply was in Waukesha.
I don't know why that surprised me so much, but yeah. You're thinking it's coming out of Lake Michigan and they go, it's going to be way softer. Yeah. I guess I never thought, right. it doesn't like that makes sense, yeah. But I guess compared to an aquifer, I suppose.
I swear, and I don't know if both of you, if you live in Milwaukee, I mean, do you guys have water softeners?
I do. Yeah. I mean, do not. Because I'm on well water, you know, yeah, you know, I need one of those iron curtains too, because we've got rust that shows up and things. So, you know, yeah, it's definitely a concern. And I guess a private well is just a smaller version of a giant aquifer, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's one thing that you had mentioned is that, you know, there's going to be a change. Even if you do keep your water softener, you have to have it optimized. I think the date is maybe January of 2025. So you've got plenty of time to make these changes. But if you decide to keep your water softener, you have to have it optimized because the amount of hardness is going to be different. And your water softener is treating for what was previously very hard water and now is, by the city's estimation, much softer.
And if I understand, the city wants that optimization so that you're not unnecessarily treating and therefore discharging a bunch of extra salt and other things into the water supply. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly correct.
So the button was pushed, the flip, the switch. Why did we both mix that up?
The switch, right?
Whatever. That was, what, a week and a half ago? Where are they at? Does everyone, is all the water flowing? I know that they have that really cool map.
Yeah, which everybody in Waukesha, you know, you'd be at the grocery store or whatnot, people would ask, like, where are you on the map? Are you blue?
Yeah.
So it's coming. So I got my water, I think it was Thursday. So, you know, significantly into the process. But they were saying that it was going to take about 5 days or so to get to where I am in the city. But the city just put out a notice just a little while ago that the flushing of the cul-de-sacs and some of the dead ends that they were, concerned about taking a little bit longer should be done by this Sunday. So they are pretty much on track for what they had estimated, but the majority of the people now are on Lake Michigan water.
Is that like is that the number one topic of conversation in Waukesha now when you meet people like, oh, have you got your water yet? Oh, we're get ours Tuesday. Is that kind of the big conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think last week in particular, it was something that a lot of people were talking about. You know, Brian and Sarah, we were downtown Waukesha on the day that this the switch was flipped or the button was pushed. And there were a couple of businesses that even said, we're going to close today on day one because we're not really sure what to expect. I talked to a coffee shop owner who said, you know, if there is going to be, redness in the water, if there is going to be minerals that are coming through, iron and whatnot, they just don't want it to damage their, espresso machines or whatever, coffee machines, the filters that they have, because that's an expensive equipment that they don't want to have replaced and they don't want to make their customers ill. It was a pretty significant deal, not only for the decades that we preceded this, but the fact that the impact was so large that wherever you went, really, there was either someone talking about it or some business that was closed because of it.
One thing I wondered about is Waukesha, we said, is the first community completely outside the basin of the Great Lakes to get this water. It seems to be working. It's solved a huge problem. Radium's no longer going to be an issue. Will this serve as a model for other communities that go, we want to try that same thing? Or are there limitations? I know Waukesha does have, while it's not in the basin, it's not straddling the basin, it is in a county that straddles the basin, which I think was the sort of legal in to do this. But is there a thought that there might be other communities looking at this? Or do you get the sense that the Great Lakes states say this is a one-time thing and this is the only place that's ever going to do it?
Yeah, I think for now this is it. I talked with an individual with the Great Lakes Compact on Monday when this all went down, and she told me that right now there's no one else, no other municipality that has submitted anything near what Waukesha had. So I think for now, this is really an exception.
Does this project and now the flip of the switch, does that solve the long-term concerns of the water contamination?
Yeah, most definitely. And, the city is saying this is a generational change, and the infrastructure that's in place right now, will outlast every single person that's watching this, right? It'll be beyond our lifetimes that this will all be in place. It was always a concern. I mean, I know what growing up, we always had bottled water. We just didn't drink the water in Waukesha. Not because we thought it was going to, harm us health wise, but it just, because you knew that there was radium in it, we just avoided it. So I think for a lot of people, especially if you got pets or kids, it was a big concern. It's so funny because I was walking downtown on the day that this all happened last week, and I happened to see this, mature lady get out of her car, little silver-haired lady, and I stopped and I went right up to her and I said, "Excuse me, are you Carol?" And she looked at me and she's like, "Yeah." She goes, "Who are you?" And I said, "I'm Brett with Fox 6. And I said, "You're Carol Lombardi, aren't you?" And she said, "Yeah." And I said, "Oh my gosh." I said, "You were the mayor of Waukesha when I was in high school. And I remember, you were really one of the the bell ringers here early on to find a solution to this. And she stopped and we did a quick interview just on
so
the
that
fly.
Was a happenstance. Yeah, I saw bonkers. The interview.
So did
you
I.
Just happened to bump into
there
her
she is.
And recognize her?
Wow.
No, that was not planned. And the photographer I was working with that day was like, how did you even recognize her? And I was like, well, I just, you know, I got Waukesha brain here.
But, because you're the Waukesha water reporter.
That's right.
So yeah, that's how you know. But she wasn't just, I mean, you know, mayor around the time. She talked about having gone to D.C.
Yeah.
to fight for this, right?
Yeah, she said she traveled with Dan Dukniak, who's the Waukesha Water Utility General Manager.
Well, talk about somebody who's lived this.
Yeah.
Dan Dukniak. He's been talking about this forever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's so funny, too, because on the ceremony in early September, when they kind of did a ribbon cutting, more or less, of the pumping station that this water is flowing through on at Broadway and Les Paul, his family was there. And it was so touching, really, because he's got two grown sons, and both of them, you know, one I think was a newborn when this whole process got started, and the other was three. So their whole life, right, Dad's been working on this project, and you know, one of them cried, and it was actually so touching to me to look and to see, you know, Dan speaking there, and to see his son sitting in the audience and shedding a tear, because it was emotional for them, because like I said, their whole life has been associated with Dad going off and doing this project and getting this water for Waukesha.
And something that, as you said, is a generational change. It is something that really affects the future of mm-hmm. everyone in Waukesha for generations to come. So obviously just a huge deal.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything, you know, I mean, obviously there have been tragedies. We can't, you know, not mention the Waukesha Christmas Parade tragedy, of course, that have, you know, really united this community in such a massive way. But this project, as you said, I mean, this project affects every single person that's living in this community. And I mean, I can't think of anything to compare it to in my lifetime or as my time as a resident of Waukesha. I mean, it really is unmatched.
Who got to push the button? That's what I want to know.
it happened early in the morning on Monday, last week, Monday. And it was the mayor, Sean Riley, and Dan Dukniak with the Waukesha Water Utility. And they both kind of hit that button, and then
so
the water
cool.
started
that
to
make, that
to
makes flow. Sense. It would be the two of them. If Dan wasn't in there, I would think, man, what a shame. Because, yeah, he's up. Yeah.
But, you did it without me.
Mayor Sean Riley, obviously, has been a big part of this for a long time as well.
Yeah, and, you know, we should also mention, too, that, you know, when they had this ribbon cutting for the pumping station, there were a number of dignitaries that were there, including Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson, and the mayor's from Waukesha and Milwaukee did a toast and had the first sip of water. So, you know, it's not only is this a change for Waukesha, obviously we feel it, you know, when we go to our tap and when we drink it. But I mean, it really is a change for this whole region, because it does impact everyone. And I've been trying to get that through in my reporting on this, because it's not just a Waukesha issue, right? This is a Great Lakes issue. This is something that people in Milwaukee should be paying attention to, because you're drinking that water too.
That's a perfect time for us to say, let's go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared. And of course, here to ask us that question is Open Records executive producer Sarah Smith.
Oh, hi. Let me just say that every morning we have an editorial meeting where we all get together and talk about stories that we're going to cover for the day. Sometimes our assistant news director, Brian, poses a question that is just like a little icebreaker question. That man stole my question.
Today?
For today. Oh. I know you all weren't in the meeting, but Brett was. So here we are. So if this seems like a repeat. So we just got a press release yesterday that talks about new data that talks about the top like 10 most popular candies. Now, this was Halloween of 2022. So
okay.
New year, new us, right? However, my love of candy corn, it's coming through.
This is a candy corn question?
No, it's not a candy corn question, but candy corn was number one, followed by like gummy bears.
Wait.
How?
Candy corn is the number one favorite?
That's what it says.
What?
Candy corn is still the king of Halloween candies. They asked me.
That's
study
your
of
your
one.
Favorite? I want to know
the candy corn lab. You must have some power.
Man, I'm telling you, I don't understand.
So, the question is, what is the best if you have a Halloween jug of candy or whatever? What are you digging for? What are you eating? And maybe, like, what are you leaving off to the side?
Okay, so for open record, like, you know, aficionados who go way back, we did talk about this a few years ago.
Yes.
And I think everyone will, if anyone knows me well, or if you're a big fan of the podcast, all three of you.
One's your mom.
You know that for me, it's probably Snickers. I mean, yeah. Snickers is number one. But the other one that I think is, like, if you could have a bunch of these mini candy bars, I'm not, Milky Way is, it's okay. I could take it or leave it. But if you've got Snickers and 100 grand.
Oh,
those two.
Yeah, but how much time in your day do you have to eat 100 grams?
Dude, it's so good. Don't hate on the 100 grams.
It is really good, but it takes forever to chew.
I will take as long as it takes to eat that 100 gram.
Okay,
no, but
Brett.
Snickers 100 gram, and then maybe Butterfinger. If you had that mix in a bowl, I'm happy.
Okay, Brett, I know what you answered, but answer it again and then elaborate.
Any Reese's peanut butter cups, my goodness.
Amen.
Those right to them in the bag. But I hate candy corn.
Amen.
Never liked it. Never.
Have you ever mixed it with peanuts, like roasted peanuts?
See, this is the thing. People always talk about, well, it's really good in a mix.
No,
and the
stop.
Thing is, when,
stop.
No, no, no.
I can eat it straight.
When I hear about what people want to mix it with, they go, well, mix it with peanuts and maybe throw in some M&Ms. And at a certain point, I go, if you do all of that and just take out the candy corn, outstanding.
See, I'm not opposed to candy corn. I won't search it out, but if there's a bowl there, I'm going to eat some.
Yeah.
It just seems to me like it's just, all it is just tightly packed condensed
it
sugar.
It is. You're right. That looks cute.
It's
I mean,
so
that's
cute.
Any candy, though.
No. It's kind of like cotton candy, but cotton candy is a loose version of it. If you just pack cotton candy together and you get that crystallized whatever it is, that's all. Candy corn is kind of that, right?
You're not wrong. I don't hate it. And I think maybe I like it more because everyone else hates it. So I want to be like candy corn stan account here. So,
okay.
Anyway,
I don't judge you for liking candy
corn. But you
do
it. That's fine.
No, if I saw a bowl of candy corn, I would very easily go, eh. No.
Oh, okay.
So it's all yours.
Well, you know what?
Okay.
Sarah, you got to come and flush it down with a glass of Waukesha water.
So well, good.
It, you know, it might taste better with the chloramides or whatever those are called. I don't know if that maybe affects the flavor.
It's like when you pair wine with chocolate. It's like what water tastes best with Halloween candy.
So I initially wanted to say Twix because I love Twix, but I feel like I get Twix throughout the year. The only thing that I get around Halloween time, and I'm probably going to be in a minority here, but is Almond Joy. I love almond joy.
Jeff got coconut and you are not on the coconut.
And that's the only time I ever see the little mini versions of Almond Joy, and I'm going to eat all of them.
Cool, because I'm leaving them.
Yeah, and I like all the things I talk about have chocolate, and they're the little chocolate bars. I think in Reese's, again, all of those are like, that's like top shelf, A level.
Yeah.
That's tier one. But the next tier, and I think it's good to have mixed in, is like Smarties.
Oh, No.
I'm definitely leaving. If they're in a bowl,
take your Smarties. I don't want just Smarties, but I love those things.
Yeah, when you mix Smarties with some nuts and some other stuff, and it's just fine.
I grew up in the era of Pac-Man. And so as a kid, to me, I thought those were like, the Smarties were like the power pellets.
Oh.
That's, you know, that was my childhood
imagination. I used to pretend they were medicine. Maybe that's why I don't.
Oh, my God. Do you guys remember the little sugar dots on the paper?
Yeah, on the paper.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
they're back. You can
you
find them
really?
At like yeah,
a lot of retro
candy shops.
Storage. You'll find those. Yeah,
my kids like them.
But the problem with
paper.
That is you always end up getting a little bit of paper.
paper
with that, and that's you know, maybe not so
okay.
Great.
Well,
well, okay.
Now we know.
There you go. All right, so we know that Brett and I we're leaning toward the chocolatey, like the whatever. And you've got your candy corn.
It's fine.
But nobody likes the Smarties, so bring your Smarties my way. I'll take them. Brett, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for all of your reporting on this topic. Obviously, you have kept viewers up to speed on everything that's happening, and I'm sure you're probably not done. But thanks again for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record, a favorite Halloween candy you'd like us to tell us about,
taste test.
Issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, like why Sarah likes such a horrible candy, send your emails to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.